judge said not only was it wrong for him to pray, he prayed the wrong way. We'll explain why that judge was wrong in at least three different ways. I'm Stuart Shepherd, and this is First Liberty Live. Thank you for liking and sharing the videos that we do. We're noting that our follower count has been growing over the past months, and it's because of you and the fact that you share these with your friends and family. So thank you in advance from us for doing that again. I've got Coach Joe Kennedy and General Counsel Mike Berry here at First Liberty with us. I need to mention they both served in the Marines. Mike, of course, still in the reserves. Hi, Joe. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hey. It's good to be with you.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for being here. I think most of our followers have heard your story by now, but for those who may be new, Mike, give us the 15-second summary of what this is all about.
Well, Coach Kennedy is the world-famous football coach from Bremerton, Washington, who was fired for the act of taking a brief personal prayer at the 50-yard line at the end of the football games. The Bremerton School District told him that if he wanted to talk to his players, he could talk to his players. If he wanted to talk to other coaches, he could talk to coaches. But if he talked to God, he would be fired. And, of course, as I know and as Coach knows, for U.S. Marines who have served this nation and defended this Constitution, that's just a bridge too far.
And we're right on the next major milestone in this case, which we're going to talk about. But first, Joe, you've been in this fight for 6 years. What keeps you going?
I'd like to see my family, of course, because my wife is my biggest fan. And, you know, this is something that needs to be done. It's for everybody out there. And every time I go and I talk to somebody and realizing that not everybody can stand up for their rights, and a lot of people don't even know they're losing them. So every time I get a chance to talk, I realize there's so many people out there that I'm also fighting for. It's just not about myself, but it's for God's glory and to do what is right.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Why did you make the commitment to pray after every game?
It started out, I was a brand new baby Christian. I really didn't know God that well. And I, you know, loved God with everything. And when he asked me to be, you know, a coach and to be a mentor for these young men, it was just, I was going to give him the glory, just like in the movie Facing the Giants, which really was a confirmation that I needed to do it. Yeah. So I kind of borrowed it from them of giving him the glory. And 50-yard line, that's where they battle, so that's what my commitment was, is just to give God the glory, win or lose, no matter what, take a knee for the thanks.
And we recently took a major step in this case, and we're getting close to, hopefully, a victory for you in this. Mike, explain for us, we filed a petition for writ of certiorari. I just wanted to say that out loud because it makes me sound smart. Explain for the rest of us what that means. What is that step in the process?
Yeah, well, the petition for writ of certiorari, or a cert petition, as we call it shorthand in the legal profession, yeah, is when you ask the U.S. Supreme Court to hear a case. Most people may not realize that the Supreme Court does not have to hear every case that is brought before it. And in fact, you have to ask the Supreme Court. You petition the Supreme Court to hear your case.
Yeah.
Statistically speaking, the court takes less than 1% of all the cases that are brought before it. And in order to get your case heard before the Supreme Court, when you submit your petition for certiorari or your cert petition, the judges will actually meet, they'll review the cert petition, and then they'll vote. And you have to get a minimum of 4 out of the 9 justices to say, we want to hear this case. And if you get 4 or more to hear your case, then you have your Supreme Court case, right? So that's the big dance. That's what every lawyer always dreams of, having a case go before the U.S. Supreme Court. And so that's what we're hoping for in Coach Kennedy's case.
And by request, it's not like you write, please take the case, but it's 46 pages long. It's a lot of research and background and really making the best possible case to try to get them to pick this up for sure.
Yeah, you know, at First Liberty Institute, we work with the best lawyers in America. And these are lawyers who have been to the big dance, as I called it, many times before. And in Coach Kennedy's case, we're working with former U.S. Solicitor General Paul Clement is our lead counsel on the case. He's argued more cases at the U.S. Supreme Court than any living person. So I have a feeling he knows what he's doing. He knows what it takes in order to get the Supreme Court for those justices to say, yes, we think this is an important, worthwhile case that we need to hear.
a lot of work went into that, and it is a good read, and it's written in a way that you don't have to be a legal expert to understand it. So we're going to post a link to that in the comments section that goes with this video if you'd like to read it. If you are in the legal profession, you'll find it very insightful. If you're not, it's just interesting to hear how they lay out the argument and try to convince the court that this is something that has to be picked up. Joe, we often talk about the final silent prayer that they fired you for. We just did. But there's a story in that petition that got to me when I was reading through this. It made me stop for a moment. And that is, as the you and the school were going back and forth in the weeks leading up to that, they kept moving the goalposts. They kept changing the requirements on you. Until finally, one game, you decided, okay, I'm not going to pray tonight. And the game ended, and you got in your car, and you headed home. Take us back to that moment. Then what happened?
Yes, I sat down with all my friends from the school district, you know, the superintendent and the principal and everybody else. These are people I worked with for a decade. These are personal friends of mine. And I did not want this fight. I thought we could work it all out. And like you said, they kept moving the goalposts. And so it came up to that moment where, what am I going to do after the game? And I decided, okay, I'm not going to do the prayer. And I got all my guys home safe after the game, and I was driving home, and I just had that feeling of absolute guilt and shame and really like a failure, and I couldn't wrap my brains around why it was affecting me so much. You teach your kids to do what is right no matter what.
Yeah.
And this was my covenant to God. This was the agreement. And now all of a sudden I bowed down. That's not fighting. That's not what Marines do. That's not what any coach should do. It's not what anybody in America should do. So I turned around, drove back to the schools at, about 11 o'clock at night, and I snuck down onto the field, and I took my knee, and I thanked God, and I said, never again will I turn my back on you, and I still gave him the glory on the 50-yard line.
Mike, why is it important to include that story, that anecdote, in something like this appealing to the high court?
I think it's important because a lot of people over the years have asked those types of questions. Well, why does he have to do it at the 50-yard line? And Coach already explained, because that's where the battle occurred, right? That's where the action was. That's where he feels called and led to pray. Well, why does he have to do it right after the football game? Why can't he wait till midnight? Or, well, then why can't he wait till next week or next season or next year? Or the list goes on and on, right? So, and it's really a slippery slope. And the point of all this is the real question to me is, why is the government the one that gets to decide how an American citizen practices their faith? Why are we allowing the government to decide how you and I or Coach or anybody out there watching, why on earth would we ever allow the government to step in and say, you know what, you're not doing your faith right. You should do it this way instead. And so if somebody has a covenant, a commitment, as Coach did, to say, God, I feel like you're calling me to pray at the end of the football game. I don't have to be with anybody else. I don't have to be with players. I don't have to be with coaches. I don't have to be with fans. It's just me and you, God. But I'm going to give thanks, and I'm going to give you the glory. And I'm not going to let anybody or anything stand between that. And if that's somebody's commitment, then as Americans, right, we should honor that. And our Constitution absolutely allows for that and protects that. And that's what we're fighting for.
Mike, I want to ask you about some of the other points that are made in that request to the Supreme Court. A lot of it is about what happened at the appeals court level. The Ninth Circuit has ruled against Coach twice already in this, and the second time around, they doubled down in a big way. I mean, they really went after it. Judge Smith, who wrote the latest opinion, said, and this is a quote, he personally finds it more than a little ironic that Kennedy's "everybody watch me pray," and that's his air quotes, not mine, that Coach Kennedy's "everybody watch me pray" staged public prayers so clearly flout the instructions found in the Sermon on the Mount on the appropriate way to pray. So he's saying not only are you legally wrong, but the judge is saying personally, you're just praying wrong. I mean, that's how we would summarize that in Kentucky, where I'm from. I hear a little hostility in that, Mike. That's more than just making a legal case against him.
Well, that's more than just a little hostility, right? I mean, that's a federal judge telling an American citizen, a U.S. Marine combat veteran who's dedicated 20 years of his life to defending this Constitution that we all love, and telling that person, you're not doing Christianity the right way, or more specifically, you're not doing it the way I would do it. I find that, I personally find that a little more, more than a little ironic.
Yeah.
And you know, the other piece of that to remember, too, is that Judge Smith did that over the objection of 11 judges of the Ninth Circuit. So it's not like this was a runaway victory, right,
yeah,
for Judge Smith on the Ninth Circuit. I mean, there were 11 judges of that court who said, whoa, this is wrong, right? This is bad. And so, I mean, to kind of tie this into the Supreme Court and our cert petition, we're very hopeful that at least four or more of the justices, will look at what those 11 judges of the Ninth Circuit said, and that will provide them with some good meat to decide, you know what, those 11 judges on the Ninth Circuit who dissented against Judge Smith, that they were right. This was a wrong decision, and we need to correct this.
Joe, what goes through your mind when a judge at that level tells you in kind of a snarky way that you don't even know how to pray appropriately?
I've heard that many times, on Facebook, social media, any platform, many discussions I've had with people. Why couldn't you just do it this way? Why can't you do it that way? And it's really none of their business how I do it. This is my thanks to my God. I'm going to say it the only way I know how and what God and I came up with.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty much used to it. I mean, the guy, I think personally, he's got some issues with me, but hey, it's his right to have his own words.
Mike, toward the end of the request, our attorney summarized it like this, and I thought this captured the essence of the case really well. It says, the record is now complete. The decision below is now final, meaning the lower courts, and the Ninth Circuit has now doubled down on its highly troubling free speech conclusion and added free exercise and establishment conclusions that are indefensible. The resulting decision is a triple threat to individual liberty and First Amendment values. So basically, it's saying the Ninth Circuit got it wrong on about half of the First Amendment when you put all that together, because they're talking about the clauses in the First Amendment as they laid out. Unpack those three clauses for us and how they got it wrong on each one.
Yeah, so the First Amendment historically contains six clauses, and so when we say that they got it wrong on half of the First Amendment, right, what we're talking about is and these are the clauses that probably anybody who's taken, you know, high school civics or U.S. history hopefully are familiar with. Hopefully you learned these in high school. But, you know, the first one is the Establishment Clause, right, which says that Congress shall create no law respecting the establishment of religion.
Right.
So that's where basically we, you know, can the government formally establish a national religion? Well, the First Amendment says no. And then it says, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, right? So that's the one that gives us the right as American citizens to freely exercise our religion. That's what we're asking for on behalf of Coach Kennedy. Can he, as an American citizen, enjoy the right to freely exercise his religion by simply, again, taking a brief personal prayer, 15 to 30 seconds at the end of the football game?
Yeah.
And then finally, the one that another of the clauses of the First Amendment that we're very familiar with, the free speech clause. Why? Because, well, prayer is a form of speech, right? It's a form of expression. So we have two in the Ninth Circuit, just as we said in the cert petition, got it wrong on all three. And to explain that, so we're saying that really the two questions that we're asking to the Supreme Court in our cert petition. First, when a public high school football coach like Coach Kennedy prays at the end of the football game, is that government speech? Because that's what Bremerton School District is saying. It's like, well, he's wearing a Bremerton, you know, shirt that says Bremerton High School on it.
Yeah.
So is that government speech or is it private speech? And then if it is private speech, then can the school district nevertheless fire him for engaging in private speech because it's worried that somehow people in the stands or people in the public will see his private speech and get confused and think, oh, well, he's a football coach and he's praying. Boy, the government must be establishing a national religion.
Said no one ever.
Said no one ever, right? Yeah. And in fact, there's a famous case. It's not a Supreme Court case, but it's a Court of Appeals case that said, you know, when a situation like that comes up in a school and a school district is left to try to think, well, we're so worried about people thinking that it's going to be a formal establishment of religion, they said, how about this? Instead of, they use this phrase, squelching the speaker, why don't we educate the audience?
Yeah.
Right? Simply tell the audience, hey, that guy you see out there praying, He's not speaking on behalf of the government. He's a private citizen, and he has the right to do that, just like all of you.
And especially by the time this came around to the point where you got fired, everybody in the community knew.
Well, that's an interesting fact. Yeah. The superintendent, he actually addressed the entire school district in our community with a newsletter that explained that he is not speaking on behalf of the school.
Yeah.
Everybody knew what I was doing. And one thing further was, you know, when the judge said I was flaunting it and everything else, I've been doing this for 8 years. And now all of a sudden I'm flaunting it. And when we watch a video at the end, during the depositions, the superintendent couldn't even pick me out on the screen of where I was praying. Huh. So I don't know who I was flaunting this to and wanting in the spotlight on me, because I did this for 8 years without even a blink of an eye from anyone else.
Yeah, and Mike, the free speech and free exercise part really get to the heart of the legal matter here. The first time we brought this, it was under the free speech part, but we were invited back by the four justices on the Supreme Court to bring it back and also make the case for free exercise. Unpack that for us, why that's significant, what it could change.
Yeah, well, you know, for years, for decades, there's been a case on the books called Employment Division versus Smith. And it's really been a thorn in the side of constitutional litigators and religious liberty practitioners such as us at First Liberty, because the Employment Division versus Smith case, without really getting down into the weeds and the minutia of it, it made asserting a free exercise claim like we're doing here a much more difficult road than it should be. All right, let's just put it that way. And so it was always this very difficult hurdle to overcome. And when the four justices, the first time we tried to get the case at the Supreme Court, told us, you know, we need some more factual development. So you go back to the district court judge, to the trial court judge, and get some more facts, let the judge develop the factual record a little bit more. But oh, by the way, we noticed that you only gave us a free speech claim, you didn't give us a free exercise claim. We think we know why, and it's because of that Employment Division versus Smith case. But you know what? It might be time for us to take a look at that Employment Division versus Smith case. So it was sort of a subtle way of signaling to us and to others, don't be afraid to bring a free exercise claim right to this court on facts like this. Now, I want to be the first to be clear here. The court wasn't guaranteeing us that they'll take the case or that they'll rule in our favor. But everybody who read that, I mean, it sent shockwaves through the constitutional legal community, because everybody said, oh, wow, the court seems to be at least very subtly signaling it might be time for somebody to challenge Employment Division versus Smith. And that's what we're trying to do here with Coach Kennedy as well. So I think that's an important thing for folks to understand, is that Coach Kennedy's case, while it's absolutely about Coach Kennedy and what's happened to him and the injustice that he has suffered, if we're actually successful and we win this case, this is going to blow the doors open on the rights of millions of Americans, far beyond Coach Kennedy. This is public school teachers, football coaches, principals. I mean, you name it. If they're a public school employee or just a public employee in general, and they want to engage in free exercise of their religious beliefs, it's very possible, if we win this case, that Employment Division versus Smith will no longer be that massive obstacle.
And that is such a challenge. I don't want people to go away from this conversation missing this point. It places a huge challenge to our legal team to make the best possible argument to bring to the court, because you can't go halfway on that when you're going after something that big. You really have to be prepared, make all the notations correct, you have to get all the citations in there right, and you have to couch the argument exactly the right way to serve it up for them to even consider it. And it's because of you and the other attorneys here at First Liberty and our volunteer attorneys. We mentioned Paul Clement is helping in a mighty way with this. That's the challenge to you guys to make this happen.
Yeah, it's very much a Goldilocks approach, right? You can't be too soft, but you can't be too aggressive either. You kind of have to have that just right approach that gives the justices just enough to feel confident that, because that's, you know, maybe one of the dirty little secrets of Supreme Court practice is the Supreme Court doesn't like to change the law in broad, you know, sweeps of action at one time. They like to sort of gradually change the law incrementally. At least that's the preference, right? There certainly can be times when there are these broad brushstrokes. But so if you can give the justices an opportunity to make changes gradually, then the hope, the strategy is that they will latch on to that and see that. And so But we feel this is really a golden opportunity for us. I mean, the way that I've looked at this is because this case has been going on for so many years now, we've had so many ups and downs and back and forth. It really is like a football game, right? With the momentum shifts. And here we are, we're now towards the end of the fourth quarter, and this is our game-winning drive. Right. This is our final drive, marching down the field. And we've got a chance to win this thing before the clock hits zeros.
We've got a great coach, got a great team, and it's fun to watch you guys work together on this. Joe, you've never gotten a bill from us, have you?
Not yet. I haven't seen anything.
and you
like
never
that.
Will. And the only way that we can do that is because of the support of generous donors, and many of them are watching this interview, I suspect. I know your heart, and I know the gratitude that you feel for that. I want to give you a chance just to look in the camera here and express
Absolutely.
Your thanks to the people who make that possible.
Right. I've had a real blessed opportunity to come and see some of you and speak before some of you. And just knowing that there's so many people out there that support these guys and keep this going, because really, when you boil it all down, I'm just a high school football coach. You know, I have barely two nickels to rub together, and the legal fees for 6 years, seven football seasons, I couldn't even compute that. I have no idea what that would possibly cost. There's no way that I could do this. So it's never just one person donating. It's all of those people. You know, they give a dollar, they give $100, $1,000, whatever that amount is. That is a blessing that is not just me. I know all the clients that know the cases that you guys are fighting for, and we would be lost. We would have been ran over by the government first day without First Liberty and the people that's out there. So everybody that's out there, I thank God for every single one of you. So if it's just a prayer or if it's the donation, it makes no difference to me. I love the support that I get out there from everybody out in the crowd and from First Liberty.
Well, we are proud of you, and we're honored to serve. Mike, you want to get the final word on this to wrap it up, put a bow on it?
Yeah, it's really just a reminder to everybody that, as I said a few minutes ago, this case, while it's absolutely about Coach and about the injustice that he has suffered, it's about so much more than that. You know, it's really about the fastest way for us to lose our freedom as Americans is to fail to stand up and say, that enough, right? I'm proud of Coach for taking that stand. It's cost him dearly, if and when we win this thing, it's going to send, it's going to have a massive ripple effect across the nation. It's going to affect millions of Americans. So we really look forward to getting our day in court, hopefully.
Yeah, we invite you to stay connected with us. Of course, we'll keep you updated as we go forward here at First Liberty, both through First Liberty Live and through our website. You can sign up and subscribe for First Liberty Live, and you'll get email notifications when new episodes come out. So we encourage you to do that so that you can keep up. We also have a special page set up that goes into more detail on Coach Kennedy's case, including a video of a conversation he and I had walking around the football field in Bremerton, Washington, and talking about the details of it. There's also downloadable resources on that page. We provided it so that you could have a full view of this and understand it in great detail. And again, we'll put the link for that in the text that goes along with this page. Joe Kennedy, Mike Berry, thank you so much for joining us. Great chatting with both of you. Always good to see you, Joe.
It's good to see you.
Thanks for having us,
everyone.
All right, and we will see you next time right here on First Liberty Live.